The passage he's going to read is from Moses in the book of Deuteronomy. As Moses looks back and sees that period of time when the children of Israel travel from Mount Horeb to the Promised Land and what unfolds there. I think looks back with quite a lot of disappointment on what went on there. And that's just what we're going to try and unpack this morning. Thanks, Wendy.
Spies sent out. Then, as the Lord our God commanded us, we set out for Horeb and went towards the hill country of the Amorites through all the vast and dreadful wilderness that you have seen, and so reached Kadesh Barnea. Then I said to you, you have reached the hill country of the Amorites, which the Lord our God is giving us. See, the Lord your God has given you this land. Go up and take possession of it, as the Lord, the God of your ancestors, told you. Do not be afraid, do not be discouraged. Then all of them came to me and said, let us send men ahead to spy out the land for us and bring back a report about the route we are to take and the towns we will come to. The idea seemed good to me, so I selected 12 of you, one man from each tribe. They left and went up into the hill country and came to the valley of Eshcol and explored it. Taking with them some of the fruit of the land, they brought it down to us and reported, it is a good land that the Lord has given us. Rebellion against the Lord. But you are unwilling to go up. You rebelled against me and the command of the Lord your God. You grumbled in your tents and said, the Lord hates us, so he's brought us out of Egypt to deliver us into the hands of the Amorites to destroy us. Where can we go? Our brothers have made our hearts melt in fear. They said, the people are stronger and taller than we are. The cities are large with walls up to the sky. We even saw the Anakites there. Then I said to you, do not be terrified. Do not be afraid of them. The Lord your God, who is going before you, will fight for you as he did for you in Egypt. Before your very eyes and in the wilderness, there you saw how the Lord your God carried you, as a father carries his son, all the way you went until you reached this place. In spite of this, you did not trust in the Lord your God, who went ahead of you on the journey, in fire by night and in a cloud by day, to search out places for you to camp and to show you the way to go. When the Lord heard what you said, he was angry and solemnly swore, no one from this evil generation shall see the good land I swore to give the ancestors, except Caleb, son of Jephunneh. He will see it, and I will give him and his descendants the land he set his feet on, because he followed the Lord wholeheartedly. Because of you, the Lord became angry with me also and said, you shall not enter it either, but your assistant, Joshua, son of Nun, will enter it. Encourage him, because he will lead Israel to inherit it. And the little ones that you said would be taken captive, your children who do not yet know good from bad, they will enter the land, and I will give it to them, and they will take possession of it. But as for you, turn round and set out towards the desert along the route of the Red Sea. Then you replied, we have sinned against the Lord. We will go up and fight as the Lord our God commanded us. So every one of you put on his weapons, thinking it is easy to go up into the hill country. But the Lord said to me, tell them, do not go up and fight, because I will not be with you. You will be defeated by your enemies. So I told you, but you would not listen. You rebelled against the Lord's command, and in your arrogance you marched up to the hill country. The Amorites who lived in those hills came out against you. They chased you like a swarm of bees and beat you down from Seir, all the way to Hormah. You came back and wept before the Lord, but he paid no attention to your weeping and turned a deaf ear to you. And so you stayed in Kadesh many days, all the time you spent there. Then we turned back and set out towards the wilderness along the route to the Red Sea, as the Lord had directed me for a long time we made our way around the hill country of Seir.
A long reading. We'll hope to unpack what's going on, but thank you very much. Cheers. When I was 11 and attending my local primary school, there was a football tournament at the end of the year, every year, for all the village schools. It was put on by the secondary schools. And we looked forward to playing in it, but of course you had to wait till you were in the last year of school till your turn came. And so that year came and it was my turn, and I was excited to hear my name read out on the team sheet, chosen to play next day. I remember going to bed with great anticipation, only to wake up feeling unwell, and I had German measles, and I had to miss it all. And I still, to this day, remember that the acute sense of disappointment that came with that. And that, I suppose that was an early lesson in life, that disappointments do come, don't they? Things that we'd hoped for. That is life. And I doubt that there are many or any of us who have not experienced those feelings of disappointment. We went for a job interview and it didn't work out. Someone we trusted let us down. Maybe we entered into a job or even a marriage and it just has proved to be a disappointment. But how do we handle disappointment when it comes? I think we can learn some lessons here from Moses and his experience of disappointment through what happened with Israel as he reflects in this chapter. Now, we left the children of Israel. I don't know if you remember, they've been there a long time, haven't they? They're camped at the foot of Mount Horeb, a great multitude of people, a sea of humanity, if you like. And Moses had received both the law of God, the Ten Commandments and the other laws, and then that whole body of information in the book of Leviticus that we so enjoyed looking at last time on sacrifice and festivals and things. But now it was time finally to leave. And in the book of Numbers, a head count takes place. That's why it's called Numbers. Because they went round numbering people, a bit like a census we would do today. And you know, a bit like, you know, when you take a group of school children on a day trip, you've got to go through and go, "Hey, are you here, Fred, here, Jim's, Johnny?" And then you count them all out and count them back in. So that was what Numbers was counting the clans and the families and the tribes. And so everybody knew who was in what. And so if you go through Numbers, it's just pages and pages of this tribe and who was in this and who was in that. And so that's where the book of Numbers comes from. But there must have been such great anticipation, because finally we're leaving, we're going to the promised land. And it wasn't an easy journey. And in fact, Moses faced continual grumbling from the children of Israel as they journeyed. Even his own brother and sister had a go at him at times, if you read the chapters, undermining his authority, intimating that they could do a better job. But these issues that Moses faced as the leader were nothing compared to the disappointment that Moses was about to experience with the Israelites as they reached the promised land. Moses had put up with a lot, but Moses was walking close to God. Moses is drawing his strength from God, and Moses still has that clear purpose to his life, doesn't he? To lead his people to the promised land. That was his big life's work. And there have been setbacks, there have been delays, but now they stood on the very verge of the land of Canaan, a rich and a fertile land that God was going to give them finally to be their own, to settle in. The land that had been promised to Abraham, their forefather, all those years before. Surely nothing could stop them now, could it? Well, the last leg of the journey was across the worst of the desert, we read, verse 19. Then as the Lord our God commanded us, we set out from Horeb and we went towards the hill country of the Amorites through all the vast and dreadful wilderness that you have seen. And so we reach Kadesh, Barnea, on the very border of the land. A short hop across the River Jordan, from the dry and arid and the dust of the desert to the green pasture land ahead. What a sharp contrast it was going to be. How welcome it would be after a 400-mile journey and 15 months since they'd left Egypt. I'm sure you've been on long journeys, and there's nothing quite like, is there, seeing the end in sight. And so I'd consider first... Sorry, that's just showing you a little bit of the journey. So they're coming from down here in the wilderness of Sin at the bottom up to Kadesh Barnea, which I put in a box, I hope you can see, just at the top of the purple there. So they're very much just on the verge of the promised land. So here's Moses. And I just think about the hopes of Moses at this point. He must have assumed that the Israelites would go in and take the land relatively easily. Sure, there might be locals who wouldn't take too kindly to an invasion, but it didn't faze him to tackle this challenge. After all, God had brought them out of Egypt. And I doubt it would have occurred to him that anyone but himself would lead the people into the promised land. But what we read in Deuteronomy are his memories of that time, 40 years later. These are his memories 40 years later. We see his rallying cry, verse 20. I said to you, you have reached the hill country of the Amorites, which the Lord our God is giving us. See, the Lord your God has given you the land. Go up, take possession of the land. The Lord of your ancestors told you, do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. So he said, come on, we can do this. You can read a fuller account of all of this through the book of Numbers, but this is a kind of summary in Deuteronomy of what went on. But in Deuteronomy, Moses is now speaking to the next generation, 40 years on. That's why it's called the book of Deuteronomy, because actually the Deut bit means the second, and the Ronomy means the law. And the book of Deuteronomy, Moses has to give the Israelites the law of God again before they enter the promised land. If you read Deuteronomy, you get all the Ten Commandments all over again. And you're thinking, well, we've had this. Why are we having it again? And the answer is that Moses now has to give it to the next generation because the first generation hadn't heeded it and hadn't gone in and taken the land. So he's now telling the new generation that have grown up, this is what God says, this is how you should live, and this is your opportunity to go in and take the land. But as Moses gave that first rallying cry 40 years earlier, I think there must have been in his heart a sense of, wow, this is fantastic. We're here. My task, my journey is almost done. He's no doubt looking forward to leading them in, lying down and thinking, whew, I've done it, Lord. This is great. I can hand over the responsibilities now with a smug smile of satisfaction all over his face. No more are we going to have to gather the manna in the desert. No more are we going to have that endless search for water. It's going to be on tap here. Well, maybe not on tap, but it was, you know, it was a fertile land. It was glorious. They could have water whenever they wanted. No more putting up and down those stupid tents. No more having to take up and down the tabernacle. No more living out of a suitcase. If they had suitcases, I don't know. But we're here. And we can take it, and it's ours. And my task will be done. I wonder, do we have similar dreams? I just need to see this bit through. I just need to get through this chapter in my life, and then it will be better. I can see hope on the horizon. You know, do we look forward to retirement? You know, perhaps that point when we can just lay down the daily grind of life, take life a bit easier without the same worries and the same pressures, if only that was true. Is that not how many of us also look forward to that precious fortnight in the year, like I've just had? You know, a few days away from it all. Usually lying on a beach in the warmth of the Mediterranean. If I can just get through this period of work. Well, that went belly up, didn't it? None of us can go to the Mediterranean. Well, we haven't been. My son's actually there this week. I don't know how he's managed that. But COVID-19 comes in and says, nah, you've got to go on holiday in England and it's shorter rain. And I wonder, you know, for you, is life pretty hard just now? You know, you have your slog day by day, and perhaps it feels like you're just in that barren wilderness. It certainly felt a bit like that during the epidemic, hasn't it? Do we not comfort ourselves with the thought, this can't go on, this must get better, it's going to improve. There must be some respite somewhere. But you know, sometimes that doesn't always materialize as we hoped. And instead, sometimes we feel like we've been plunged into a deeper wilderness. Our dreams, our ambitions, our desires, the things that we hope for maybe lie in tatters. For some, you know, they've had those dreams for what they wanted to do in life and they failed, so they didn't live out their ambitions through their children. You've seen people do that, haven't you? You know, they put all their focus on their children. Perhaps they'll be able to achieve what I wasn't able to do in my life. So Moses, he must have had such hopes. But let's consider, secondly, after his hopes, his disappointment. And the disappointment results entirely from the attitude of the Israelites around him that he'd been trying to lead. And the first big mistake of the people was that they desired to spy out the land. God had said he was going to give them the land and that they'd be able to go in and take it. And Moses had told them that. But no, we need to go in there and see it for ourselves and be sure that what we're doing is the right thing. The proposal to spy out the land didn't come from God or from Moses. It came from the people. And Moses thought, well, I suppose that seems a sensible idea. You know, send some people on ahead, see what the conditions are like. And God allowed that. One from each tribe went in response to their cowardice. But really, that spying trip was unnecessary. And the results only actually served to deepen the mistrust of the people. God had given them the command, go in, take the land. And the second big mistake they made was listening to the reports of the spies, the discouraging reports of the majority of the spies. Because 10 came back and said, oh, it's a lovely place, but the people are frightening. It's incredibly scary in there. The 10 only saw the difficulties, didn't they? Two spies came back with a good report, Joshua and Caleb. They saw the difficulties, yes, but they looked at everything through the lens of God's perspective. They encouraged the people, it's okay, we can go up and take the land because we're doing it with the Lord. But the people went with the majority, didn't they? They went with the 10. Well, 10 of them are saying it's terribly dangerous. And so they didn't go and take the land. And it was a fatal mistake. Later, they tried to rectify it themselves. They realized the mistake and they tried to go up and take the land in their own strength and they failed to do so. But for this whole generation, God said, no, you didn't exercise the faith. And so that generation is going to die in the desert. You're going to be out there 40 years until that older generation dies out. And only their children, the innocent ones, who weren't old enough to make a decision, they will go in and take the promised land. You know, that's a very important verse here. I just want to point out something about infant mortality. Because people say to me sometimes, you know, if a baby dies and it hasn't had an opportunity to put its faith in Jesus, and does it go to heaven? And I say to them, yes, because that child is an innocent. It doesn't know right from wrong. It hasn't made its own mistakes. And the verse I often turn to is this, verse 39. And the little ones that you said would be taken captive, your children who do not yet know good from bad, they will enter the land. I will give it to them and they will take possession of it. I don't hold the little ones accountable for this sin. They're not old enough to have reasoned to be responsible for their own decisions. I think it's quite an important verse. But I want to make some application to ourselves here for a moment. Why did Israel fail to go in? What was the key problem? Unbelief. It was unbelief, wasn't it? Other unbelief never gets beyond the difficulties. Faith doesn't ignore the difficulties, but it faces the difficulties with God's help and counts on Him to see us through. They could not enter because of unbelief. I don't have time to read this passage, but go home and read Hebrews 3, verse 7 to 19. Hebrews 3, 7 to 19, that gives a commentary on the unbelief of the Israelites and how we need to have belief. We have to take faith, God at His word. Still today, the only thing that excludes anyone here from entering into God's eternal promised land and eternal rest is unbelief. God has provided the way of salvation in Jesus. The only thing that will exclude you is your unwillingness to acknowledge your need of Jesus, of His grace and forgiveness. Don't get locked out because of unbelief. What a disappointment this must have been for Moses. Can you imagine what it was like for him? He must have been tearing his hair out with them, mustn't he? Within a day's march of entering the promised land, he even reached out and tasted the first fruits of the land, the grapes and everything that had been carried back into the camp by the spies. It was a land flowing with milk and honey, but they didn't take it. And in verse 40, we see what God told Moses to do next. He says to Moses, "But as for you, turn around and set out towards the desert along the route to the Red Sea." Oh, cheers, God. You know, I've given my life for this, God. I'm here on the border of the land. What are you telling me to do? That's what I'd be going. Thanks, God. What did Moses do? Well, he actually just rolled up his sleeves and he got on with it for another 40 years while they wandered around in the desert. Yeah, they tried to go up and take the land in their own strength. That didn't happen. But Moses bowed his head. He accepted the need of discipline for Israel. He didn't argue with God. He didn't plead his own cause. He accepted it and got on with it. Then we turn back and set out towards the wilderness along the route to the Red Sea. And do not such times come in our lives? We think we stand on the brink of some opportunity only for it to be snatched away. God allows us setbacks. He still goes with us, as he did with Moses. Well, it's hard sometimes, isn't it, to go back to the grindstone of the task in hand. But you can't force the day of the opportunity. And it's hard, for Moses, when others disappoint you. But you have to learn the lesson of patience and faith. And Moses believed that God had a plan and he knew what was best. For all his disappointment at not entering, Moses could still satisfy himself that he was walking in the will of God. And he believed in the end it would turn out all right in the end. Might take 40 years to get there, but my people will still get there. And God's great daily grace would continue with Moses through those 40 years, sufficient for a day at a time. So when you have a major disappointment, they do come. Try to look at it this way, that God still has a plan. He has not abandoned you. It may take some time for it to become evident, but when things don't go as you'd hoped or planned, God has not forsaken you. Roll up your sleeves and get on with it, and he'll be your grace each day. If you're stuck in that job and it's not what you hoped for, remember God knows. If you're made redundant, God has a plan. If a relationship you were in did not work out, or your partner has died, God has a plan. If you hope to enjoy retirement but find it not what you expected, or you find yourself unwell, God has it in hand. Now, at the end of the day, strange as it may seem, from an earthly perspective, Moses' final resting place was not found in the Promised Land. You might think, what? Another 40 years and he didn't get there. It would be 40 years till the new generation entered Canaan. But Moses himself never actually made it into the land. You can look at why Moses didn't enter the land. There's a passage in Numbers 20 about when he gets water from a rock. And God told him to do it one way and to speak to the rock. And Moses, by this point, was getting really annoyed and really frustrated by it all. And he struck the rock in his own strength rather than doing it in the way that God said. And because of that, God said to Moses that he would not himself enter the land. He never entered Canaan. That might seem hugely unfair to us. That might seem desperately sad. If you read in Deuteronomy 34, you can read the account of Moses. He sees the land. He can see the whole land. But God lets him die there. And it says that God buried him, not the people. Don't know how God managed that or how God did that, but we have to trust that God buried him there. And so Moses disappears from the story, and it's Joshua who takes over and leads the children of Israel into the promised land, as we'll see next week. But is that the end for Moses? No. I'm pleased to tell you it's not the end, because he gets his reward. How do I know that? Where does it say that? Well, if you turn to the New Testament, Matthew 17, verse 1 to 3, and the transfiguration of Jesus, we read this. After 6 days, Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John, the brother of James, and led them up a high mountain by themselves. There he was transfigured before them. They literally saw Jesus in all his glory. His face shone like the sun, and his clothes became as white as the light. Just then there appeared before them Moses and Elijah talking with Jesus. Wow! Here's Moses. Do you think he made it to the promised land? I think he did. Not the earthly one, but he made it to glory with his God and met the promised Savior, Jesus Christ, face to face. And he's given a place of honor, isn't he? Next to Jesus. And the key to that was his faith. His faith and belief in God unlocked the door to paradise itself. Do we have such faith? Do we have such hope? No matter what disappointments come to us in this life, and there are many, are we certain ultimately of reaching the promised land in Jesus Christ as our Savior, all through his merits? Lots of disappointments we might have on the way. But God will prevail. And if we're in Christ and we're in God, we will prevail with him, because we're adopted into his family. We're his children. We're heirs of the promise. We're heirs of all that is wonderful to come. So when the disappointments come in this life, and they surely do, let's try and keep that perspective. But be sure that you are going there through belief in the way appointed in Jesus Christ, who died for you, who dealt with your sin, who wants to make you a member of his family. Don't be locked out by unbelief like the children of Israel were. The first generation, anyway. God bless you. Thanks.